As a journalist, I've known Catherine Boughton for over 30 years. I first met her on a trip to Antarctica in 1979. A famous picture of me interviewing penguins was taken by Miss Boughton. But I was never fully aware of the extent of the private battle she has been fighting, an invisible condition that affects 50 million Americans. I'm talking about hearing loss. If you think hearing loss is something only older people have to worry about, you may be surprised to find out, as I was after reading her book, that 50 million people suffer from some degree of hearing impairment, and it can happen at any age. Ms. Boughton went deaf at the age of 30. Today, she has help from a cochlear implant and hearing aids, but it's still a struggle. In her notebook, she describes how she learned to cope with hearing loss and why we need to do more to address this widespread but misunderstood problem. Catherine Boughton is author of Shouting Won't Help, Why I and 50 Million Other Americans Can't Hear You. It's going to be on bookshelves next week on February 19th. She joins us here in our New York studio. And if I'm speaking more clearly today than normal, it's because Catherine Boughton can't hear me. And she is mostly lip reading. Is that correct?
I am partly lip reading, but you have a good voice for me.
That's good.
Your voice is at a frequency level that is one of my better ones.
Finally, something good with my voice. But you don't call it lip reading anymore, do you?
You're supposed to call it speech reading.
Because?
I don't know why the hearing profession wants that, but in fact, it is reading not only the lips, but body language, facial expressions. So speech reading is more accurate.
Our number is 1-800-989-8255 if you'd like to talk to Catherine Boughton. And if she can't hear what you're saying, I'll relay the question from my reader here. This is a really interesting story. You discovered when you were 30. Tell us what happened.
Well, I was sitting at my desk writing. I don't remember what I was writing. I think I was writing a piece for The New Yorker that was published before I went to Antarctica with you. And my phone rang. I could hear the phone. And I picked it up. I always used to pick up the phone with my left hand and put it to my left ear so that I could take notes with my right. And I couldn't hear anything. And I said, hello, 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 is anybody there? And then I switched to my other ear and somebody said, yes, I'm trying to reach Catherine Boughton. So that was alarming. But after I hung up on that call, which I listened to with my right ear, I made various other calls. In those days, you could call the weather and you could call time. And so I made various calls to see whether I could hear out of both ears, and I couldn't hear out of my left ear. I wasn't initially that alarmed because I, like all children of the 60s and 70s, had gone to my share of rock concerts and had lost my hearing temporarily before. And I thought maybe this was a temporary loss.
Mm-hmm. And then it spread to your other ear.
It didn't spread to my other ear for a couple of decades. I spent most of my 30s and 40s hearing with one ear, hearing with my right ear, and I did pretty well with my right ear. Around the time I turned 50, my hearing loss is progressive, so the left ear was going down, 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 down. And around the time I turned 50, the left ear was so far down, and the right ear was so basically non-functioning that I finally gave in and got hearing aids, which I should have done long, long, long before that.
You talk about so many things in your book. Is there a central message you want to give people about hearing loss?
Yes. There are a couple of messages I want to give people. One is that if you suffer from hearing loss, don't suffer alone. There are a lot of people out there like you. I spent a good number of years not acknowledging my hearing loss. I cut off a lot of my friendships. I antagonized a lot of people. I eventually lost my job, as I talk about in the book. And I really thought this was something that was happening only to me. After I left The Times, where I worked for 22 years, I went to the annual meeting of the Hearing Loss Association of America. That year it was in Washington, and that was a complete revelation to me. There were so many people there, and they were so interesting, and the talks were so interesting, and everybody was going through the same thing I was. So that's my first piece of advice is get out there. There are other people like you. Acknowledge your loss and talk to other people. My second, I want to just add this, is we need to do something about noise because it's by far the largest cause.
We'll get into that. I'm talking with Catherine Boughton, author of Shouting Won't Help, Why I and 50 Million Other Americans Can't Hear You on Science Friday from NPR. And the title of this book, Shouting Won't Help, is symptomatic. People just scream at you, don't they?
They either scream at you or they lean way in and talk very close to your ear. And just to go back to speech reading for a minute, if somebody does that, I'm at a total loss. I need to see their face to hear them talk. So don't shout, don't lean in and whisper.
Mm-hmm. I have partial hearing loss in one of my ears due to an experiment on television with a firecracker that went bad. And I have tinnitus in my ear, which it's been ringing for over 30 years. So I can, and one thing I'm very conscious of is the noise around me because I want to protect the good ear, you know? And there is so, and you write about this in your book, how we worship noise, basically.
Yes, mostly in recreational activities, concerts, stadiums are incredibly loud. The whole dispute about guns and hunting, nobody ever bothers to mention the effect on hearing, but hunting is a major cause of hearing loss, usually only in the ear next to the gun. But even just walking down the street to the studio today, I have an iPhone with a decibel reader on it. And between Times Square and Fifth Avenue, where this office is, the decibel meter jumped between 80 and 90 the entire time, which is pretty loud.
You know where I saw one of the worst offenders? The bathroom in airplanes. that little flush toilet that makes a... I took my decibel reader in there with me once, and it was over 110.
Wow. I didn't know that. That's amazing.
It is so loud. It's just amazing. Is there anything to be done about this? Or any, do we tell our kids? Because my kids have those, they have their earplugs in, and I can hear it. And I say, if I can hear it, it must be too loud.
It is too loud. It's not. I mean, there's a lot of different scientific opinion on the effect of moderate noise over a long, continuous period. So even if your kids turn down their headphones, iPods, if they have them on 12 hours a day, they may still be damaging their hearing. If they have them on 12 hours a day and you can hear it, they are damaging their hearing. Yeah. So that's one thing we can do. But I think we have a lot of noise ordinances in this country, and except in the workplace, we don't enforce them. You don't have to have the headphones on to be exposed to noise. Yeah. All you have to do is go out to dinner in a restaurant, or worse, be a waiter in that restaurant. So you're there all day long with that noise blasting around you.
Talking with Catherine Boughton, author of Shouting Won't Help, Why I and 50 Million Other Americans Can't Hear You. Our number, if you can hear me, is 1-800-989-8255. You can also tweet us at SciFry, at SCIFRI. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Excuse me. After this break. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking with Catherine Boughton, author of the book Shouting Won't Help, Why I and 50 Million Other Americans Can't Hear You. It hits the bookshelves next week on February 19th. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Let's talk a bit about hearing aids, because people always talk about hearing aids. How effective are they? You wear hearing aids?
I wear a hearing aid.
A hearing aid.
And a cochlear implant in the other ear.
Is there a difference between the two?
Oh, yes. I could not wear a hearing aid in my left ear because my hearing is non-existent. I have profound hearing loss in my left ear. A cochlear implant is surgically implanted. It operates in a completely different way from a hearing aid. It takes digital signals, which it sends to the brain, and then the brain interprets those digital signals as words. On the other side, I'm hearing those same sounds in terms of sound waves, which are amplified by my hearing aid, and they're going to those same brain pathways, which are trying to coordinate the two different kinds of signals that are coming and turn that into speech recognition. What was your question?
I'll ask it. My mother wore hearing aids until she was 98 and passed away, and she never got used to them. She never thought they really helped her. And sometimes she would say, I have to take it out of my ear to hear better. Are hearing aids, do they work?
They should work. I don't know where your mother got hers, but it's very important if you're wearing hearing aids to have them properly fitted. There's a new kind of hearing aid called an open fit hearing aid, which just fits very loosely into your ear and then has a behind the ear component. The fitting in those is not as important, and because it's just not so close. But mine are full in the ear things, probably not the same size as your mother wore, but they do fill up the ear canal. And if mine were not properly fitted, it would be painful. And in fact, if I gain or lose weight, my hearing aid fits better or worse. At one point, when I got a new hearing aid, I had in between lost about 10 pounds. And they couldn't use my old mold. They had to recalibrate the size of my ear in the shape of the hearing aid. So your mother probably was, and I think a lot of people even today are wearing hearing aids that don't fit and that don't really work because they don't wear them, for starters, or because they haven't been properly programmed, or because they're not the right hearing aids for that person.
When you got your implant, it says in the book that you had to relearn how to hear again. What was that like?
It was very, very hard for me because I always wore my hearing aid. I was still working. I couldn't afford not to hear. I couldn't afford to just wear my implant all the time and not hear out of my other ear. So I didn't give my implant a chance in the first 5 or 6 months, which are the crucial months. But the way you relearn to hear is I worked with a speech pathologist who would go over the sounds that were difficult for me. She would cover her mouth and she would say, am I saying fit, fat, or fat, fit? And I couldn't really hear the difference between fit, fat, fet, fot, any of those things, or between bit, bat, bet. So I practiced with her. I practiced a little bit on my computer by myself at home. I put headphones on and listened to recorded books and read along with them and then tried to take my eyes away and see if I could still follow. Learning is not quite the right term for it. You're really just training.
And you also said that you call yourself deaf, but that's not politically correct.
Well, deaf with a capital D refers to the deaf community, which is a community with a culture and a language, American Sign Language. Even people who wear hearing aids can be members of the deaf community if they choose to define themselves that way, and if they use American Sign Language as their primary language. I and many other people who have hearing loss just get tired of saying I'm a person with hearing loss, and so say, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, I'm deaf, small d. And it's really just it's shorthand, and it's also a little bit gives you just a little sense of triumph of being able to say, I'm deaf, you know, speak more clearly to me. So
1-800-989-8255 is our number. David from Syracuse, New York. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, I'm a first-time caller. I love your show. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
You're welcome.
When I was about 4 or 5 years old, I developed the mumps. And in my left ear, I wound up with a 55-60% hearing loss that was diagnosed at the time as what they would call a nerve deafness. Now, I'm just curious. It's gotten worse over the years. And I'm just would like to know from your guest if there been any advances. They even still use that term, nerve deafness.
Okay.
And if there have been any other advances other than a cochlear implant that are kind of hanging out there.
Let me see if I can.
I did hear that.
Okay.
You're asking whether the term nerve deafness is still used. It is. It's a misnomer most of the time. Most hearing loss that people have is sensorineural, which means that you're either your sensory, your auditory nerve, or the hair cells in your cochlea are damaged. The only time it's truly, by definition, nerve damage is if it's the auditory nerve. Most of the time it's the hair cells, but that's still called sensorineural hearing loss, and it's the kind most people have.
Right. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Take care.
Thank you. You say that what we think as nerve damage or as hair cell damage really is not what people really have.
Oh, they do.
They do.
Yeah. Hair cell damage is the kind of damage that's caused by noise exposure. Mm-hmm. It's caused by exposure to ototoxins like various drugs. Cisplatin, unfortunately, which is a very valuable cancer drug, is an ototoxin. Vicodin is an ototoxin. They all cause the same kind of nerve damage. They flatten your hair cells so that they can't communicate properly with the nerve that goes to the brain.
Is it possible to regrow your hair cells? Because every week or so, there's a little bit of good news about stem cells or something like that that might stimulate them to regrow.
In 2010, Stefan Heller, who's at Stanford University, was the first to manage to regenerate hair cells in a mammal. Fish and birds regenerate their hair cells automatically. A lot of work has been done on this at the University of Washington, at Stanford, at Harvard, and other places, trying to figure out why it is that fish and chicks can do it and we can't. I spent a lot of time at the University of Washington and at Stanford talking to the various researchers there, and they think that within a decade they may have mastered the techniques, but that doesn't mean that this is going to be available to humans anywhere in the near future. This is incredibly complicated work. I think that nobody wanted to estimate how long it would be before this could be applied to humans, but they were willing to say between 10 and 50 years.
So some things are always 30 years away.
Yes.
1-800-989-8255, talking with Catherine Boughton, author of Shouting Won't Help, Why I and 50 Million Other Americans Can't Hear You. Give us some tips for the correct way to talk to people who can't hear you.
Well, don't shout.
Don't shout. No matter how loud you shout, it's not going to help.
Don't lean in and talk into the person's ear because, as we were discussing before with speech reading, you need to see the whole face, the body. If you're in a room with a bright light source, let the person who is hearing impaired sit with their back to the light source because otherwise you'll be silhouetted and they won't be able to read your body language. I have a whole list of suggestions about how to talk to people with hearing loss, mostly because I'm constantly telling people how to talk to me. They're in the book.
But one thing you did mention I thought was very interesting is I can't cook and talk at the same time.
I love to cook. I'm a pretty good cook, and I love to have people over for the holidays. Last Christmas, I had 25 people. And, you know, my friends want to be helpful, and they come into my kitchen, which is a New York City kitchen, and it's not very big anyway. And they want to talk to me while I'm trying to juggle about five different dishes at the same time. And it's distracting. I make mistakes in my cooking. Sometimes I spill food on myself, burning food. But I absolutely cannot hear what the other person is saying. And I finally just say, can you leave? I appreciate the thought, but it's not helping.
You also tell people, or people tell you, I think you were saying that your husband Dan used to get tired of hearing you say, what's that? What's that? Can you find something else to say besides what's that when you couldn't hear it?
Yes, he says, what I would say is what? Mostly these days I say sorry. It seems a little bit more important. Sorry, can you repeat that? The original title for my book was Say What? And I didn't think enough people in America said say what, but now I've discovered that plenty do. It also helps. This is another tip, actually. When somebody does say what or sorry, don't repeat exactly what you said before. If you can possibly find a way to rephrase it, the person with hearing loss is much more likely to be able to pick it up the second time around.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phone. Susan in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I'm deaf in my left ear, and when people talk on my left side, I can't hear a thing. It's like being completely deaf. And I have a real hard time understanding the conversations on TV. I don't know if other people who are partially deaf have that problem, but it's a real problem for me.
Because you are deaf in one ear?
Yes. Yeah. Sound comes through my head. I can't describe it because I've never had sound in both ears. Hmm. But truly, when people are on my left side and they start talking to me, I don't hear them at all. If I'm with friends, they know and poke me or answer the question or say, look at that person.
Hmm. Catherine, she's saying that she's deaf in one ear, and it really is even though she can hear in the other ear, it doesn't help very much.
Okay. Yes, no, I can really relate to that. I was in that position for about 20 years. I always made a point, if I possibly could, to position myself with the person who was talking to me on my right. I know people talk to me on my left side who I had no idea they were talking to me. And recently, actually just yesterday, I ran into a man in my building who said, oh, I found your article in the Times on Tuesday about dementia and hearing loss. He said, it was so interesting. I had no idea you had hearing loss. But I do remember one time when I was talking to you and you didn't answer me, and I thought maybe I'd said something offensive. So, yeah, it is a problem. I don't have any suggestions except just try to always position yourself correctly.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR. Talking with Catherine Bowden, author of the book Shouting Won't Help, Why I and 50 Million Other Americans Can't Hear You. One would think that if 50 million Americans have this problem, we'd be more aware of it, or that there might be some more help coming for these Americans.
I think that we're not more aware of it because there's a stigma associated with hearing loss. As you said in your introduction, most people think that it's a natural part of aging. If you're getting towards aging, you don't want to add to the impression that you're already there by wearing a hearing aid or acknowledging your hearing loss. So a lot of people do not acknowledge hearing loss. In counting hearing loss, if you ask epidemiologist simply asks someone if they have hearing loss, a lot of times they'll say no. They may not be aware of it, or they may just not want to admit it. The same thing is true with hearing aid use. If you ask somebody if they use hearing aids, like Ira's mother, they'll say yes. But in fact, they're taking those hearing aids out most of the time because they're uncomfortable. So they're not using them properly. And this really, really skews the statistics. It was one of the hardest things in writing my book was to try to figure out exactly, you know, what number of millions of people in America have hearing loss.
Are there any things that are happening now that help hearing people? Does technology help us besides the hearing aid?
The cochlear implants are wonderful. Even though I've had a hard time with mine, I wouldn't not wear it for anything. There is a lot of technology that's coming about, and I think it's not really intended to help the hearing impaired, but it does. For instance, the New York City subway system has installed LED lighting and messaging for when the trains are coming, what trains are delayed. I for 40 years could never hear a thing on the subway, and now all I have to do is read like everybody else. There's also, this is true more in airports. Things are visually displayed as well as somebody talking through that megaphone at you that you can't hear. One of the things that I really want to do with this book, if I can, is to raise awareness of how difficult it is for people with hearing loss to get around.
Yeah. Does text messaging help? Is it an intended, unintended consequence?
I love text messaging. I love email. I can't imagine what my life would have been like before text messaging and email. I would have been just a completely different person and really, I think, totally isolated.
Catherine, thank you very much for taking time to be with us today. So good to see you again.
Thank you.
Catherine Boughton, author of Shouting Won't Help, Why I and 50 Million Other Americans Can't Hear You. Everybody knows someone with a hearing problem. Everybody will certainly benefit from reading Catherine Boughton's book.